Where do our laws come from? Where do our laws come from in Ohio? Sure, Ohio lawmakers have ideas, but they rarely know how to write them down as laws. They rely instead on others to draft the legislation. Often they turn to special interest lobbyists who are monitored and regulated to detect illicit influence peddling and other shenanigans. Some turn to the American Legislative Exchange Council. For short on the program, we'll call it ALEC. It's a private members-only club made up of corporations and state lawmakers from across the country who prepare model legislation. They are not monitored, they are not regulated, and they do their work privately. For more than 30 years, this club, this organization, which includes people like Tea Party backers Charles and David Koch, has been devoted to free enterprise and smaller government and has brought together powerful lawmakers and corporations to craft model legislation to that end. So, recently, more than 800 ALEC documents were leaked to an Ohio-based activist who had organized protests at ALEC's spring meeting in Cincinnati. Those documents were shared with The Nation magazine, which has teamed up with the Center for Media and Democracy to analyze them. Coming up, we'll hear from two longtime State House reporters about how the art of legislating has changed over time in Ohio, or not changed at all, perhaps. Joining us now is John Nichols. He's the Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine. John blogs at The Beat at TheNation.com. He's also author of The S-Word, A Short History of an American Tradition. He's also co-author of The Death and Life of American Journalism. Welcome back to the show, John.
It's a great pleasure to be with you, Ann.
Also with us is Ohio State Senator Bill Seitz. He represents the greater Cincinnati area of the 8th Ohio Senate District. Litigator by trade, Senator Seitz is the co-chair of the American Legislative Exchange Council's Civil Justice Task Force. He's also on the ALEC Board of Directors and is the highest-ranking ALEC official in Ohio. Welcome to the show, Senator Seitz.
Happy to be with you, Ann.
So how big is ALEC and who gets to join?
Well, ALEC is an organization that is open to all state legislators throughout the country. It is one of three trade associations that state legislators may belong to, the other two being the National Conference of State Legislators, NCSL, and the Council of State Governments, CSG. And ALEC is unique in that while it is a bipartisan organization, it is generally regarded as the more conservative of the three organizations. And its model is different than the other two because the other two are largely funded by a combination of tax money paid by the member governments and private corporate and other contributions and foundation contributions, whereas ALEC is funded by dues paid by the individual state legislators that choose to join, along with a private foundation and corporate contributions. So that is the principal differences between ALEC, NCSL, and CSG. It's not at all uncommon for legislators to attend multiple events and conferences put on by any of the three organizations. I have chosen during my 11-year career in the Ohio legislature to get involved in one on the theory that those that get involved in three are generally involved in them for the junkets rather than for the actual work. So I decided to just focus my efforts on ALEC, and currently I co-chair the Civil Justice Task Force and was just at the beginning of this year put on the national board.
So the dues. It's $50 for lawmakers and upwards of $25,000 for corporations.
I don't know what the corporate donation structure is, but the lawmakers pay dues, and I believe I pay 100, but that may be over a 2-year period because we have a 2-year cycle in the General Assembly, as you know. But we pay out of pocket, whereas those that are involved with NCSL. Or CSG, they don't pay anything. They have it paid for by the taxpayers.
And the taxpayers have access to the documents from MCSL and the stuff that comes out of NCSL. I've covered their conferences before, but do the taxpayers have access to the comings and goings and the documents that are generated from ALEC?
Well, all three organizations publish publish periodic newsletters. CSG and NCSL generally have a monthly publication that I read. ALEC is typically more of a quarterly publication, but this business that it's all secretive is really laughable. I mean, ALEC rejoices in its newfound publicity. But as you pointed out, we've been around for 30 years, and I don't really think there's anything too secret about it. The model bills are available for people to review. The model bills, to the extent they're introduced and adapted for state purposes in state legislatures, are available for debate and discussion. Typically, they will promulgate model legislation, but we all know it has to be adapted to the particular circumstances of one's own state. I don't really detect that much difference between the workings of NCSL, CSG, and ALEC. I worked very extensively with CSG on our sentencing reform legislation in Ohio. I co-chaired the Justice Reinvestment in Ohio project, in which we were ably assisted by CSG and the Pew Center for the States. So this is the kind of thing that think tanks do. I mean, well, wake up, folks. I mean, there's probably two dozen different similar organizations that do this kind of stuff, from the Heritage Foundation, the Buckeye Foundation, Policy Matters Ohio, Americans for Tax Reform.
So what do you think sets apart something like ALEC then?
As I say, I don't really know that there's anything that sets it uniquely apart other than the fact that it is generally regarded as, of the three state legislative trade associations, the one that is most identified with generally free market and conservative principles and policies.
Have you ever introduced legislation in Ohio that was written by or for the American Legislative Exchange Council?
As a matter of fact, it's worked both ways in my case. The legislation that we passed some years ago regarding reforming asbestos and mesothelioma lawsuits was actually my legislation, and it became ALEC model legislation. After we passed it in Ohio, ALEC said, hey, that is really perfect, and so we're going to roll that out. And they took my bill and made it ALEC model legislation. So it's worked that way, and it's worked the other way too. Right now, ALEC is promulgating model legislation that delimits the obligation of property owners to trespassers, responding to an effort by liberal-backed groups to expand the liability of property owners to trespassers. And so I am introducing that legislation in Ohio, and I've had to adapt it for Ohio purposes because we've already imposed significant statutory limitations on the obligations that property owners have to trespassers. So we had to take their model bill and reform it for Ohio purposes, but it's worked in both directions in my case.
We're talking about an organization that's called American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, with Ohio State Senator Bill Seitz. He's an ALEC board member. Also with us, John Nichols from The Nation, and he's a Washington, D.C. correspondent for The Nation. Did Senate Bill 5, or some facsimile of Senate Bill 5, the one that limits actions by public employee unions in the state of Ohio, such as striking and that kind of a thing, was that generated by ALEC or something like it?
In no way, shape, or form was that generated by ALEC, because one would think, being on the national board and chairing one of its task forces, I would know if it was. The fact of the matter is, I voted against Senate Bill 5. I remain opposed to Senate Bill 5. I signed the petition to put Senate Bill 5 on the referendum ballot. So this whole cloth, fanciful notion that ALEC is somehow behind Senate Bill 5 could not be further from the truth.
Well, that brings up a good point, because when model legislation comes out of ALEC, is it something that who decides what's going to be the model legislation? Hypothetically, legislation like that could have come out of ALEC, and you oppose it. So how would you stand by that?
Well, here's the process. You have ALEC operates through task forces. I co-chair one of six or eight task forces. Mm-hmm. The task forces are comprised of equal members of private sector members and public sector members. In order for model legislation to advance beyond the task force phase, it must receive an affirmative vote of a majority of both the public sector members and the private sector members. At that point, it goes to the national board. The National Board, allows only the public sector members to vote on whether it should become model legislation. And that is the process. So the private sector is involved at the task force level. For legislation to advance to the national board, it must receive an affirmative vote of a majority of both the private sector folks and the public sector folks. But when we get to the final promulgation of model legislation, only the public sector folks on the board mm-hmm. vote.
John Nichols mm-hmm. from The Nation, what's the problem? That sounds like they do everything just like they do at the legislature. It sounds a lot like how things operate at the legislature, except for a few minor details.
Actually, I think it does sound a lot how things operate at the legislative level in an awfully lot of states. 98% of ALEC's money comes from private sources, mostly from corporations and corporate-funded foundations. If you know anything about how politics operates these days, I think it's fair to say that while most legislators aren't defined or dictated 98% by corporations, the average person would tell you that, yeah, corporations have an incredibly high level of influence over our politics. The question is whether that's a good idea. I happen to be of the old school that thinks that states ought to be a little different. They ought to come up with their own approaches, have their own ideas, rather than accept a template coming out of a institution where 98% of the funding comes from corporate or corporate-allied foundations. I just don't think that's healthy. And, you know, I happen to be a big fan of Senator Seitz. He is A, smart, B, independent, cast a very courageous vote and took some very courageous steps during your fight over labor reform and labor law there in Ohio. I just think he's made a very bad choice as such an independent and capable man to associate with a group that, frankly, is so beholden to multinational corporations, particularly tobacco companies, energy companies, but also groups that promote private prisons, things of that nature, and that really do generate so much of this legislation. You know, Senator Seitz made the point that when you get up to the board level, the stamp of approval is put on the legislation by the elected officials, the folks who contribute the 2% of the money to fund ALEC. But, you know, to get to that level, for any bill to get there, it has to be approved by corporations. A group of corporate folks sit around at the at this task force level and decide what bills make sense and what bills can advance up the ladder. And so then you end up with situations like ALEC promoting at a very aggressive level around the country, liberalizing of the laws, weakening of limits on moist smokeless tobacco. This is selling, you know, chewing tobacco to kids. And, you know, this is not something that any responsible legislator in any state, certainly a Bill Seitz, would come up with. This is something that the tobacco industry wants. And you go down the list of bills, bill after bill after bill, in area after area, and you see where the hand of the corporations is very firmly on both the writing of the model legislation as well as the propagating of it. And for every Bill Seitz around the country, there is a legislator who will put forward a bill verbatim from ALEC. And I don't want to embarrass Senator Seitz, but I'm sitting here with a stack of Ohio bills and a stack of the ALEC model legislation, and we could spend the rest of the hour reading verbatim where Ohio legislators have taken bills from ALEC and introduced them without changing a word.
That's John Nichols. He's Washington, D.C. correspondent for The Nation. Also with us, Ohio State Senator Bill Seitz. He's a board member for the American Legislative Exchange Council. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
We weekday mornings, prepare for the day with NPR's Steve Inskeep and Renee Montaigne and hear local news updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team. Listen to Morning Edition weekdays from 5 until 9 a.m. on 89.7 NPR News.
And this is All Science with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. 79 degrees with sunny skies. We'll reach a high of 89 today. Partly cloudy tonight and an overnight low of 69 degrees. More sunshine and warmer for Thursday with a high of 92.
Support for 89.7 comes from Meijer, a family-owned Midwest supercenter giving away over 7 million antibiotics, 500,000 metformin pills, and 1 million prenatal vitamins. More information is available at Meijer.com.
There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or like WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Just visit WOSU.org/email to sign up. All Science continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about model legislation from the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. It's being introduced in state legislatures around the country. ALEC is a private members-only club. It's made up of corporations and state lawmakers from across the country, including one of our guests, Ohio State Senator Bill Seitz, who's a board member for ALEC. Thanks again for joining us, Senator.
Happy to be here.
Also, John Nichols is with us. He's Washington, D.C. correspondent for The Nation, which broke a story about the recent leak of about 800 documents from ALEC regarding model legislation that has been generated from ALEC meetings. John, if ALEC is open, as Senator Seitz says, why do the documents have to be leaked? I mean, isn't this stuff you can just get access to anyway? What did you get that we can't already get per State Senator Seitz's assertion?
Well, it's the model legislation and the resolutions, as well as the list of the people who are involved in all of these activities. There are some things that ALEC does publicly. There's no doubt of that. In fact, ALEC has been especially active in Ohio, and there have been many, many media reports on how ALEC has been engaged in defining legislation. Most of those reports don't tell how that legislation was developed, though, and frankly, you won't see that up front. What was leaked was access to all of the documents, which legislators do have access to, but citizens don't. And here's really where the huge problem with ALEC is. And I would say if there was a liberal group doing the same thing, it would be just as much of a problem. You've got a situation where legislation, model legislation, and resolutions, as well as statements about where policymaking should go, are developed internally, secretly, and are made available to the legislators who might be members. There are 2,000 legislators who are members of ALEC, as well as the corporations. But citizens aren't brought into that process. They have no access to or knowledge of that process. Also, no easy way until now with this leak to go into a searchable database and find out what's going on. And this is really where the legislative process breaks down. Perhaps not with someone as wise, and I would again say independent, as Senator Seitz, but we have so many examples, I mean literally now in the hundreds of examples around the country, of legislators who literally took major pieces of legislation on key issues like voter ID bills, tort reform, education reform, and I will note, labor law reform, particularly the assault on unions that's currently going on, bills like paycheck protection, which take away the ability of unions to operate in the political sphere, or at least undermine it, all coming out of ALEC, all introduced verbatim or in virtually identical form, and coming not from the people and not from their elected representatives, but coming out of Washington, coming out of a closed operation, primarily funded by corporations. You know, legislators pay dues of $50 a year. Corporations pay between $7,000 and $25,000 to sit with those legislators. And it just seems to me that if people know that, if people are aware of that, they may be uncomfortable with it. I certainly am. I don't want the people I vote for to represent me in the state legislature to be developing legislation sitting in Washington or Palm Beach or wherever they go. I'd rather have those legislators coming back to to my district where I live talking to me about what I think is a good idea. And one of the things that comes through so strikingly with Alan is so many of the pieces of legislation that sort of make no sense, that seem to appear from someplace far away from where people live, far away from what people are concerned about, and that frankly create, quote-unquote, well, what I would describe as new issues, concerns or problems that people never worried about, aren't coming from in our states. They're coming from outside our states. They aren't the concerns of our citizens, of our voters. They are the concerns of multinational corporations, many of them that don't even have a baseline loyalty to not only the states, but even domestic concerns. And I just don't think that makes any sense.
Just to name some of the bigger corporations, there's, of course, Coke as in Coca-Cola, Coke as in the Koch brothers, Peabody Coal, Exxon, Altria, and R.J. Reynolds, Bayer, and GlaxoSmithKline, and Walmart, for starters. Caller from Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I have a question, and I want to explain why I'm asking the question. I would like to know what working-class representatives, what public sector or private sector unions are involved with this organization. And the reason I want to know is that the working-class feet of unions and the working class are bloody from dancing with this corporate agenda and this entire scenario. Since Nixon, with wage and price freezes, they're wearing baseball cleats, we're wearing $2 tennis shoes, and we can't catch a break. For 30 years, our wages have been stagnant.
Well, Senator Seitz, is anyone in ALEC representing working class?
Well, I think specifically to his question about whether there are any unions that are actually funding ALEC, I don't know of any. That doesn't mean that the legislators that belong to ALEC do not represent the working class. The working class works for many of these very same evil corporations that John talked about, and we believe that a regime that promotes free markets and a regime that promotes sound civil justice lawsuit abuse protections is promotive of a better economy. We are not behind Senate Bill 5, as I said before. Mm-hmm. I voted against it. They have model legislation opposing the card check bill at the federal level, which has now been stalled. And they have previously passed the concept of paycheck protection, as John said, but that concept is simply that members of unions have a right to know where their union dues are being spent politically. So that is as far down the road of that agenda that ALEC has traveled, to my knowledge. Certainly, Senator Jones, who was the principal person behind Senate Bill 5, to my knowledge, has never been to an ALEC event and is not active in ALEC. So she did not find anything for her Senate Bill 5 out of anything we did in ALEC. The working class, you know, it's funny when we talk about corporations. I go to high schools and I say, listen, let's talk about the role of lobbyists. And I go through the room and I ask each kid, what does your mom and dad do? I said, they have a lobbyist. There is no one that I have ever met in a high school classroom whose parents are not represented by a lobbyist somewhere or another. The unions have lobbyists. Every major corporation has lobbyists. Every public sector union has lobbyists. Even the nudists in Ohio have a lobbyist.
True.
So you know, the reason why we have lobbyists is because the average citizen cannot be on the steps in Columbus every day. Mm-hmm. That's not to say we don't listen to average citizens. No fewer than three separate bills of mine this session came from my constituents with good ideas that I'm working to get enacted into law. And so we do listen to the working class and all of our constituents, but every constituent is at some level represented by a lobbyist.
And you make a really great point, and I want, because in Ohio, just from covering the state legislature and following it for 20-odd years, and by the way, thanks to the caller from Hilliard, the issue has been transparency, that everybody's there, everybody's at the table. We just want to know who's at the table so that we can draw conclusions for ourselves as individuals about where there might have been influence or not, or who influenced that part of the bill or not. And Louisiana Representative Noble Ellington, he's the national chairman of ALEC, in response to the nation's report, said that ALEC is transparent because after the model legislation is brought to the state, it goes through the regular process of vetting and committees with public hearings and whatnot, except that the public doesn't know who was sitting at the table when the model legislation was created in the first place, right? If I go to, like, the ALEC website, I can't find out who was in the room and who testified on behalf of that piece of legislation.
Well, that's probably correct, but so what? I mean, you have a whole legislative process, and the process of how a bill becomes law is a long and arduous process, unless, of course, people want to jam stuff through with procedural improprieties, and that normally is not the case with ALEC model legislation, which, at least in the civil justice area, deals with very difficult questions. But you have the whole legislative process. This idea that this has all come to light because of a leak of documents, I really don't understand that either. I got open records requests from, I don't know if it was from John, but I got open records requests from Common Cause and gave them, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pieces of paper. So anybody wants to know what I've been doing with ALEC, I think right down to the thank you notes I send at the conclusion of the various conventions we go to, I think I've turned all that over. So that's not a leak. That's just a response to an open records request that I believe was issued to at least many, if not all, of the Ohio legislators. There's really nothing secret about that. And when we go through the legislative process, even if some legislator introduces an ALEC model bill verbatim, as John mentioned, has happened, according to him, the rest of us, through the legislative process, have the opportunity to clean it up, amend it, make sure it suits our state, and the public at large, and every other interested party can come in there and argue about it. That's the process.
John Nichols, isn't that vetting process at the state level enough? And if not, why?
Well, of course it's not enough. Good heavens. You know, when a legislator, especially somebody as good as Bill Seitz, says, well, you know, I've been open about this. When I got an open records request, I responded to it. Well, you know, look, the people who, you know, the long-suffering voters and citizens of Ohio and states across this country, have now for decades been in a situation where, with the increasing role of special interests in defining our political process, things happen which they have very little access to, very little knowledge of. And you and I have talked about this, the rapid decline of statehouse journalism across the United States. Our legislators are not covered as well or as fully as they were even 5 years ago. I mean, any major group will tell you that there just isn't as much coverage. And so you end up in a situation where people really do not know what is being done in their name with their tax dollars, but without their informed consent. And this is, you know, it's interesting, the caller got to a core question, how many unions are involved with ALEC? I've run through the paperwork. There are no unions involved with ALEC. There aren't any community groups. There aren't any, you know, kind of local organizations or grassroots groupings. I mean, the folks that are involved with ALEC are interested parties, major corporations seeking to achieve ends that are beneficial to them. And they write model legislation in consultation with legislators.
A lot of folks think a good example of that is the legislation that was introduced in Arizona that changed its immigration laws, and that a lot of the language in that bill was formulated by the private prison industry because, of course, they benefit when immigrants are arrested, or illegal immigrants, I should say, are arrested and taken into custody.
This is absolutely the case across the country.
So, and, I was wondering if you could give me another example, though.
That's kind of funny, too. And I'm not familiar with the Arizona, you know, private prison industry, but I will say that plenty of organized business interests oppose Arizona-style immigration law because they do not wish to be held accountable for hiring illegal immigrants. So there's a perfect example of where one special interest is fighting another special interest.
Yeah, and the only problem is that within ALEC, You're right. Special interests do fight special interests. But somebody prevails. And the great problem of the task forces, and I'm really very critical of the task forces, is where the legislation is drawn. On a task force, the hyper-interested corporate folks focus in on on a particular task force. And so on the task force that deals with issues like immigration and prisons, Russell Pierce, who is the Arizona legislator who pushed the draconian immigration law in that state, serves, but also highly active on that task force is the Corrections Corporation of America, a private prison building company that, frankly, wants to have legislation on the books that's beneficial to it. Now, it's technically not against the law for anybody to want to have bills written that are beneficial to them. I think, as the senator points out, there are interests all over on all sides.
It happens all the time.
But when you're behind the closed doors and you're sitting with the legislator who is writing the legislation and you're there helping to actually pen the words and sending it out to Arizona, again, I think the people of Arizona should have known up front that that legislation wasn't crafted by State Senator Russell Pierce in Arizona. It was crafted by a group of people sitting around that included special interests that would benefit financially from the enactment of that legislation.
We have an email from a listener. They write, in 2009, a Washington lobbyist for a company seeking to vastly limit liability for firms responsible for asbestos releases that have made thousands of Americans sick went to North Dakota. The bill introduced in the state legislature that would do this was ALEC model legislation. The lobbyists indicated that they were acting on behalf of ALEC to pass the model bill, but only registered to lobby for Cork Seals and Company. ALEC later funded a soiree for state lawmakers the same week. Would you agree that this is a case in which ALEC was lobbying? Senator Seitz, what is the lobbying issue with ALEC? What are the rules regarding lobbying by ALEC?
Well, I don't know, and I'm certainly not going to speculate on what happened in North Dakota because I've never been inside the state of North Dakota. I can tell you that the Crown Cork and Seal Company is a member of ALEC, and I can tell you, as I said very freely at the top of the show, the legislation that we passed in Ohio back in, I think, 2003 or 2004 included the provisions on successor liability for prior asbestos claims. And that was not ALEC model legislation. That was my legislation, and that became ALEC model legislation. So you know, mm-hmm. I mean, ALEC provides, just as CSG provides and NCSL provides, resources on what is the law in other states, and they promulgate their model legislation. I'm not sure that rises to the level of lobbying, and I don't know whether under the law of North Dakota, the ALEC people that gave a seminar for the folks in North Dakota should have registered as a lobbyist or not. Typically, in Ohio, there's no problem if you invite all members of the legislature to a cocktail party or an event. There's no ethical violation there. So, typically you only have to register as a lobbyist if you are making more than de minimis contacts with legislators for the purpose of advancing specific legislation.
Senator Seitz, when you travel to ALEC conferences,
we're going to New Orleans next week. It's a great city, but not the first week of August.
Before in the first week of August. I'll vouch for that. But when
right.
you go, who pays for your travel? Who pays to keep
right.
you?
The way that works is mm-hmm. you keep. They will ALEC. Will reimburse through the state scholarship fund, which is monies raised at the state level. They will reimburse for your airfare and your hotel and your registration fee. Okay, and then so you do get reimbursed when you turn in the receipts for your taxicab and your airfare and your hotel and things like that. You get reimbursed for.
And that's money raised in the state.
It's money raised
from
in the
corporations
state.
And foundations and that kind of thing.
That's exactly right. So they have a state scholarship fund, and our state chairman is Representative John Adams from the Sydney, Ohio area, and so he works with the private sector chair in Ohio, who is Ed Koslick from the Time Warner Cable mm-hmm. Company, and the two of them are tasked with raising the money in Ohio to fund the Ohio legislators that wish to attend ALEC events. At the Cincinnati meeting that we had at the end of April, I think there was something on the order of 18 members of the Ohio House, and I don't think there were too many senators, maybe two or three of us at most, that were that came to Cincinnati. Now, in my case, didn't cost anything because I live here. But Alec has good participation by the Ohio delegation. We're one of the top states in terms of the number of legislators that go to Alec events. Okay. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that we have a substantial Republican majority in both the House and the Senate. But we've always been active as a state in Alec. The current chairman of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, Steve Buehr, the current administrator, was our Alec chair in years gone by. And then he became on the national board of CSG. So, you know, we've had Ohio has a noble tradition. Former Senate President Aronoff was in charge of CSG 1 year when he was Senate President. Former Senate President Finan was in charge of, I believe, NCSL when he was Senate President. So it's good that Ohio legislators have the opportunity to meet with their colleagues in other states and compare notes. And there's really nothing nefarious about it. It's not a bad thing that we have the opportunity to talk to our colleagues in other states because we really don't get that opportunity very often.
Parting thoughts, John Nichols, quickly?
Sure, I'll do it as quick as I can. haven't had much chance, but let me just throw in that I appreciate Senator Seitz's openness here. He has acknowledged that he's going to get a free paid trip to stay at the New Orleans Marriott Hotel at an event where he will be surrounded by representatives of some of the largest multinational corporations in the world, corporations that will spend hundreds of thousands, perhaps even millions of dollars, to have the opportunity to hang out with him. And, in fact, the other legislators who are there. The important thing to understand about this is that citizens of Ohio should know that their senators, that their representatives are flying off to New Orleans or to the W Hotel in San Francisco or other elite hotels around the country to spend 3 or 4 days hanging out with representatives of multinational corporations who will spend lavishly to entertain and take care of these legislators and who will actually fund the travel. But it's not lobbying, so don't worry. It's just sort of one of those quirky things that happens in American politics.
John Nichols, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
John Nichols, he's the Washington correspondent for The Nation. He blogs at The Beat at thenation.com. Also with us, Ohio State Senator Bill Seitz. Thanks so much for joining us, Senator Seitz.
Happy to be with you and looking forward to being with hundreds of my legislative colleagues next week down in steamy New Orleans.
Okay. Thanks again. Coming up, we'll hear from a couple of longtime State House reporters about how laws are made in Ohio. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
$11.2 million Africans survived the Middle Passage and landed as slaves in the New World.
And of that 11.2 million, how many came to the United States? 450,000.
The rest became slaves in Latin America and the Caribbean. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Henry Louis Gates about his new book, Black in Latin America. Also, actor Brendan Gleeson, join us.
And Fresh Air begins at noon on 89.7 NPR News. The story of 20th century Appalachia is the story of a rich but deeply troubled region forging its own distinct identity. From the Union battles in the 1920s to the enduring environmental and cultural dilemmas of our own time, this week on WOSU-TV, we see new attitudes and new environmental challenges. Old people coming back and new mountain lovers moving in. Watch Appalachia, A History of Mountains and People, Friday night at 10:30 on WOSU-TV. Sunny skies today, a high of 89 degrees, partly cloudy tonight, and a low of 69. Sunny for Thursday, a little warmer, a little more humid, with a high of 92. Partly cloudy Thursday night, a low of 72 degrees, some sunshine for Friday, and a high of 91. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We We're talking today about how legislation is written on the state level. We've been talking about the American Legislative Exchange Council with State Senator Bill Seitz, who is on the board there, and also with John Nichols of The Nation. Joining us now is Laura Bischoff. She's a reporter for the Dayton Daily News, Columbus Bureau. She covers state government and politics for how many years now, Laura?
A whole decade now.
A decade, a nice even decade. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
And Lee Leonard, he's a retired United Press International and Columbus Dispatch State House reporter. He covered Ohio politics for 36 years. He takes us back a little bit farther than Laura. He's the author of A Columnist's View of Capitol Square, Ohio Politics and Government from 1969 to 2005. So welcome to the show, Lee.
Thank you, Ann. It's nice to be here.
So, Lee, you've heard of the American Legislative Exchange Council. That was in business as early as 1973. It's nothing new to you. Is it what you imagined it, or has there ever been this kind of debate about it before that you remember?
No, because they've always had their model legislation, and the conservatives in the House would subscribe to it. They'd put their bills in, and no one would hear of them again. The only reason that this controversy is taking place now is because they're in control. They have the power. They have the governor. They have the House. They have the Senate. And so the legislators are members, a lot of them, and they pay attention.
So Alec, therefore, is more powerful.
I would say so, yeah. Right. I'm not there now, but they probably are.
Oh, I would agree with Lee. I think that Alec is more influential in Ohio in the General Assembly now because I think the General Assembly has a higher percentage of true conservatives. And so I think that
And more of them would likely be members of Alec.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what about the idea that the idea that legislation is debated more openly in state government than it is, say, well, in an ALEC session in one of their task force or?
Well, certainly ALEC, we don't have access to what they're debating behind at their meetings. And even as John Nichols pointed out, the model legislation, the resolutions and such are kind of behind a wall, a members-only wall on their website. I think that the legislation in the state of Ohio is debated openly. But there's sort of a parallel track. There's the hearing process, which is open, and there people get up and their proponents or opponents and interested parties, and they give their 2 cents. But then I think that there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind closed doors, and I think that's where a lot of the real key decisions are made of what's in, what's out. Just in recent months, substitute bills have been introduced at the very last moment, and there's been almost no opportunity to read them for the press or even the minority side or even members of the majority haven't seen
it. Can you give
us
an example of
something?
Well,
the voter identification bill that it passed it was introduced in the House and passed like 2 weeks later, and then it sat for a couple months, and then it popped up in the Senate, and there was a big uproar because the substitute bill, which had all the nitty-gritty details in it, wasn't available until, I think the hearing was supposed to start at 9, and then it got delayed and delayed and delayed. And then it came out at noon. They took a one-hour break, and then they planned on voting on it. And then they backed off of that plan. But that kind of stuff goes on fairly routinely.
And I think it goes on more than it used to from what I've been reading in the paper. This is an abuse of the process, and I think that's what we ought to be more alarmed about than we ought to be with model legislation, because that legislation that comes from ALEC and NCSL and other places, it's not going to get passed unless it has people that want it in the legislature. And I agree with Laura that the abuses of behind-the-scenes stuff and throwing things into a budget bill and coming up with last-minute changes is worse than having an organization or even a lobbying group submit a bill and then have hearings on it. And the only problem might be that nowadays a lot of these legislators senators are new because of term limits, and so they may not be as sympathetic to full and open debate as they once were.
Why would their newness?
Because they come in with an agenda, and they haven't been around the horn, and see how legislation is crafted. That element is a dangerous thing that a lobbying group from outside the state could submit a bill and they would just go along with it because they like it. They don't want to sit around and listen to opposing views or problems that might need to be corrected before the law is passed.
Laura Bischoff, what difference does it make that we don't know who's at the table when they're formulating the model legislation in an ALEC session?
Well, I think that if you know that Walmart is behind a bill or you know, Coca-Cola and Pepsi or whoever, it seems like it's a lot easier to understand where they might be coming from. And it's just another piece of information, and then you know who's the muscle behind it, who wants it passed, and then you can kind of look for, you know, reasons why they might want this and how it would impact the public and the Joe citizen in general.
A lot has changed in 20 years in terms of how the state regulates lobbyists. It's shut down I don't know how many restaurants in downtown Columbus when a lot of the reforms went through about 15 years ago. What's it like now? What do lobbyists have to – well, Lee, why don't you tell about back in the day, you know, 20, 25 years ago, what it was like in Columbus at the State House, and then Laura, tell us what kind of restrictions are under today.
Well, the lobbyists would invite legislators to go to dinner after the end of a busy, long day of debating bills, and they'd all order their drinks and sit around, and then the lobbyists would pick up the tab, and they'd all go on their way, and there was a lot of intermingling, and a lot of ideas got exchanged, and that would influence how things went with these members, and it eventually went too far, and then they had to be reined in. And now you can only spend up to a certain amount, a very small amount, like one good dinner per year on a legislator. So it's been reined in. Now the campaign contributions have not been reined in, but the lobbying by meal and drink have been reined in to the point where if the lobbyists want to interact with the legislators other than going and knocking on their office door and sitting down with them, they have to go to a fundraiser. You just can't go to a nice restaurant more than once in a cycle and buy the legislator's dinner.
Plus, Laura, the lobbyists are registered now.
Sure. You can look them up on the Joint Legislative Ethics Commission website, mm-hmm. JLEC, and they have a pretty nifty, easy searching system. And you can find out who their clients are, and you can also find out who the companies have hired as their lobbyists.
So if you see a lobbyist hanging around a certain lawmaker, you know, in the lobby during session or something like that, you wonder, what are they talking about? You can look them up and figure out.
Sure. The one thing
that's
is
a very simplistic view, I know.
But it's true. Also, in Ohio, the how much those companies pay those lobbyists is not disclosed. But how much a lobbyist pays to take a lawmaker to lunch or what have you, that is disclosed in quarterly reports, which are kind of cumbersome to go through, but they are available.
So a lot of restaurants shut down when they put the kibosh on the feed bag. But what else really changed, Laura, much?
Well, as Lee said, there's less wining and dining, but they still are going to these fundraisers. And
there more of those?
You know, I don't know if there's more or less. There's a lot of them, certainly. Shortly before Lee retired from the Dispatch, they published a monopoly board-like graphic on the front page of the Sunday Insight section, and it was brilliant. It was very funny and whimsical and colorful and very accurate. And it talked about the path of what you're taught in school about how a bill becomes a law, very simplistic. And then Lee had the whole game board laid out for, you know, the bill is derailed here. Oh, go to a fundraiser just before the vote. Okay, then you're back on track. And some bills, sort of funny, some bills, like the voter ID bill, you know, it rocketed through the House in like 2 weeks. They can pass a bill in, you know, the blink of an eye. And then there's other bills that it takes years and years and years to get that passed.
See, I think that kind of thing is more of an abuse than the model legislation
the holding
that
back.
Comes in. The way that they come up with something at the last minute and they throw in a substitute bill, or worse yet, they amend the budget, or they put it into a bill which is supposed to be a single subject bill, and the courts have slapped their wrists and said, don't do that anymore. And then within a few months, they're back to doing it.
Yeah, they load it up like a Christmas tree. I mean, it's just, it is pretty astounding that they can slip all this stuff in.
See, I think that's worse than the model legislation, because if you're going to have model legislation that's geared to conservatives, you got to have a whole bunch of conservatives in your legislature if it's going to pass. So my answer to that would be go and vote somebody else in.
What else? I mean, when it comes to something like what are the typically the spending bill, the 2 year state spending bill generates a lot of activity around the state house by lobbyists. But this year, the governor told them, you know, back off.
I'll run you over with a bus.
Right. Something like that. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
No, the lobbyists were still, they're still out there doing their job. And as Senator Seitz said, you know, everyone has a lobbyist. I mean, the county commissioners have their lobbyists, the townships association, the schools, the universities, the private prisons, and pretty much everybody has skin in that game in that budget bill.
The American Legislative Exchange Council, you were familiar with it, Laura, before?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and they've been around for a long time, as you said, I think, 1972 or so. But I think they're becoming more influential because there are more and more conservatives in the legislature.
Is it something, as a statehouse reporter, that you would track that a bill's introduced, you'd try to figure out where the bill comes from now? You can't assume that it just came from something here. You look elsewhere, you look outside the state and see if it's being introduced in other states.
Well, sure. You always wonder, well, how did this get into the budget bill, or where did this come from? Who's behind it? Who's supporting it? The Dispatch did some stories about in the budget bill inserted at the last minute was all this stuff to benefit charter schools. And then they found out that David Brennan and the charter school movement worked directly with the Legislative Service Commission, which is a nonpartisan, horse barn of lawyers and analysts and the rest of it who are supposed to write the legislation.
The technicians.
The technicians, mm-hmm. Right.
Well, years ago, we would go to the Legislative Service Commission, and I remember sitting in there for several days in a row looking through there and seeing, well, where did this amendment come from? But then that got shut off.
Well, you used to be able to just call them up and ask.
You couldn't do that anymore because Senator Finan, who was the president of the Senate.
Former Senate president, yeah.
Yeah. He said, we're not going to have this anymore. Those kinds of records were put
right,
off
their
limits.
Their work product is no longer considered a public record.
So
it's always a guessing game.
It's always a guessing game. Well, it's not ever a guessing game when I have you guys, and I really appreciate your insights and your help today. Laura Bischoff, Dayton Daily News, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Lee Leonard, former Dispatch reporter and UPI at the State House for 36 years. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate
it. Good to be with you. Thank you.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.